Welcome to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Dialing up the latest tactics and hottest trends, we're here to help you take your B2B game from stagnant to stellar.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Marianne. And together, we're ready to answer your burning B2B sales and marketing questions.
Each episode, we'll tackle a need-to-know topic in the ever-evolving world of B2B sales and marketing. We'll break it down with actual takeaways that you can implement right away.
And because you don't get results without real talk, we're wrapping up every show with a quick Q&A segment. So fire away with your burning questions.
Whether you're a seasoned sales leader or a marketing maestro just starting out, the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline is your one-stop shop to take your B2B efforts to the next level. Hi, welcome back. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Emily. I'm glad for another episode.
Yes, me too. And today is a fun one to talk about because we're going to be talking about the buying process and what the expectation of a typical buying process is versus what we actually find to be the buying process.
And specifically for B2B because it's very different than B2C. And yeah, they're just not comparable. So
yes,
in the B2B world, we need to make sure that we understand what the reality of the buying process is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, when we think of what, you know, we've all been in like the prospecting calls where people are anticipating a buying process to look like. And a lot of times it's just, you know, they fill out a form, they come to your webinar, and then next thing we know, they're talking to sales, and the next thing we know, they're buying the service. So like I find that's like kind of what a lot of businesses actually like promote that as like the norm, right? Like you're gonna host this webinar, you're gonna get a bunch of leads, and then you're gonna close those leads relatively quickly. And I don't think people often take into account everything else that goes into that process.
And what's funny is that like I believe that I too believed this at one point, right? Yeah. I think that times have changed rather than just everyone has the wrong perspective. I think that that was more accurate several years ago. And additionally, we've been having the same conversation to an extent with clients from the very beginning. So I think that the reality has continued to change, but the idea of what that dream is hasn't changed at all.
Yeah.
So it's gotten wider and wider. The gap has gotten wider.
Yeah. I also think I believed this, like going into marketing and many years ago too, like when, you know, inbound form fills, leads and all of that were like relatively new and people were like excited about the idea of it. You know, the lead you received was oftentimes like moved through the funnel pretty quickly. And I feel like now, you know, with so much more content out there and so much more people knowing about download options and where to go to find specific things, a lot of times people aren't still not ready to talk to sales when they fill out that form.
Well, and I think that people got in their head, okay, perfect. All I have to do is put content out there and people will fill out my forms and be ready to talk to me. And they didn't slow down enough to really think through the buyer's journey fully and how they're creating content at all stages of the journey. And so you shouldn't have the same expectations for someone who's just in the awareness stage or someone who's in the decision stage.
Yeah.
And then of course, like, I think we just need to caveat and say every business is unique. You know, we work with all B2B clients, but we work with lots of different industries and we see it in industries specifically. Some industries have a longer sales cycle than others. So of course, every industry is unique, but just in general, I think the dream for marketing and for sales is to, you know, make that one connection and then be moving right along your way. I think the idea is just that we're reaching everyone in their decision stage and that's not the reality.
And I love that you said that too about like the buying cycle and how long things are. Cause in my brain, I was just thinking like, yeah. And it's also dependent on like how much of a commitment it is to work with your business, right? Like there are some professional services that, you know, you're making a year, 2 year long commitment. It's a hard, you know, switch from one vendor to another. And it's a harder process. So that sale, your seller is going to work harder throughout the process to sell that. And, you know, it might be a year before they get that sale versus something that's maybe a little bit more like easy commitment, easy trial, you know, a radio ad on the radio or whatever, it's an easier barrier to entry, might be a quicker sales process, less money involved initially, stuff like that. So you kind of have to think through also like how hard it is, how long your buying process is, and then determine kind of the sales process. And just so everyone listening knows, we actually made a graphic.
We'll call it our famous graphic, but it's not famous yet, but it is popular. So we'll keep it up calling it our famous graphic.
Yes. But in the graphic, we have kind of like the dream, you know, what people are considering as the dream scenario, that form fill straight to sales, boom, we have a sale. And then really the reality of it, which includes a lot of other touch points. So like, you know, maybe you get someone who attends the webinar, they come to your webinar, they sign up and they attend. Well, maybe they're not ready to like talk to sales yet. So maybe that's all going to have to work a little harder, right? They're going to need to go connect with them on LinkedIn. They're going to have to call them a few times. They're going to have to, you know, work hard to get in touch with the person. Right. And then come time to meet with the person, there's a lot of scenarios, you know, they're going to be, there's maybe other people who need to be involved. So more calls. And then maybe there needs to be a case study that we share. Maybe there
is education along the process.
Education.
And it's like to work with you, what it's like to work with whatever industry you're in general, what some of the obstacles are going to be. And so making sure that you understand that that education is leading to that sale and that, you're just invested in sticking through that buying process rather than just expecting it to happen quickly.
Yes, totally. And I'm looking at this graphic too. And I mean, there's all kinds of things in here that I think are really interesting. So when you get a chance, do go look at it. But also like having, you know, in marketing, like going on like different social network groups and posting about the same thing, or like, you know, having different conversations with different people at the company, things like that too, having different marketing messages going out to different individuals based on their titles, things like that are effective and prolong the process, but they do end up making it more successful.
But I think like what can be overwhelming to people is that it seems really sporadic. Oh, well, I just have to do all of these things all of the time. And I don't think you have to do that. I think you can come up with a strategy that's going to work for your industry and your business.
Yeah.
And tools like HubSpot that we partner with can give you the analytics to see what is working. Okay, if you take your past 5 clients who have signed with you after presenting a proposal and look back at their track record, what have they looked at on your website? What touch points has your salesperson have? Look at their activities page and see what happened. You can replicate based on that. You can create a strategy based on those activities rather than just throwing darts. What's that phrase?
Throwing darts at the wall. I think that's what it is.
Yes. Just trying to do all of the things, essentially. You know what I'm saying. Well, there is a way to create a strategy around this. So anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree. And I think what you just described also is a playbook. Sales plays. You know, if you're listening and you're a leader of a sales team or a marketing team or an organization of some kind, like thinking through what are those touch points that need to happen and then actually documenting it into a repeatable process that people can do. So, you know, email sends on this day, email sends a couple of days later, we connect on LinkedIn on this day, we call them and here's a script, like giving specific touch points in order to like really move these people. And, you know, as much as sales and marketing kind of converge in this, there's also like, there's very much a marketing process and a sales process that needs to happen. Definitely. Marketing needs to be sending promos, you know, really like doing their marketing thing, you know, putting out social media posts.
Separate strategies,
but intertwined. We need to be talking to these people.
Compliment each other.
Complimenting, yeah. You'll be talking to these people separately, but complimentary, and moving them through the buyer's journey.
Yeah. I do love this graphic though. It's a good reminder to everyone. Yes. What the dream is and what the reality are very different, and that's okay. It doesn't make it wrong or bad. But it is something that you have to understand so you can plan for and strategize.
I think we also, I mean, we've worked with so many customers over the years that have gotten discouraged in the beginning because they aren't seeing, like, you know, a ton of success right away. And I think that this graphic also illustrates, like, this stuff takes time. Like, just because you're generating leads and they're not becoming sales immediately doesn't mean they won't become sales. It's important when leads are coming in, you're generating, you're building your database of leads. We need to be doing more than just like hoping for a sale. There needs to be a long kind of process that happens to move them to that sale. And I think it's honestly, to me, the graphic more than anything is encouraging for businesses to know that, you know, what they're doing is working and that it's just sometimes the dream is, you know,
less easier.
No one else is doing. Yeah. It's not like others are achieving this like crazy amount of success and you're not missing out. Like this is just kind of the perceived process. And most people, if not all, are, you know, having kind of the more longer and drawn out process that's leading to better results.
Right. I love it. So true. Okay. We'll download our graphic. We'll put it in the notes. So you all can see our famous,
graphic we're referring to here. Listen to the episode while looking at the graphic.
Okay. Should we dive into questions?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay, the first question, we have two questions. The first is, how many times should my sellers be reaching out to the same unresponsive lead before giving up?
I think this is a perfect question too for our conversation today, because I think the same thing applies with unresponsive leads as it does with anything else. Like, we need to keep talking to them. People come in as leads and then they forget. They, you know, they fill out all kinds of forms. Think about your day to day. Like, when you're interested in a service or a product, like, you're filling out lots of forms to determine like the best route. And the seller that annoys you the most is often the one you're going to follow up with, right? Like, it's not, I find that your seller should be reaching out all the time and often for several weeks before they give up. And before they give up, they need to have some kind of breakup message or something that's, you know, I'm no longer going to reach out to you.
Give them a chance. Yeah. And different methods, right? Sending an email every day is not going to be as effective as reaching out to connect with them on LinkedIn, giving them a call, leaving them a voicemail.
Yes.
Voicemails anymore. Leave a voicemail, follow up from that voicemail with an email. There's lots of different ways to connect. So following up in multiple different avenues to try to reach them and in a condensed period of time, like you said.
So be persistent. Yeah.
You're better off reaching out more often in a shorter period of time than reaching out once a week for 4 months.
I also think another misconception that I've heard so many times over the years is that, like, leads are easy sales, right? Like, oh, it's a lead. It's an easy sale. Like, oh, the seller just has to call them. It's easy. And I don't think that that's the case. And I actually think that, like, that thinking is what makes sellers give up, because they're like, oh, it should be an easy sale. They filled out this form. Oh, they're not responding to me after one time. They must just not be interested anymore, moving on.
Right.
But I think it's important to consider that a lead is just slight, like a lead that comes in from your website, like a form fill lead, is just
warm,
like a
lead versus cold.
Warmer yeah. lead yeah. than a cold lead. Like, I would prospect and talk to a lead the same way I would like a business that just opened up down the street that you feel is a good fit for you. Like, I would talk to them and get in front of them and give them all of the like sales collateral and education that you would like anyone else.
I love it. Okay. So did we answer the question? I mean, the reality is, how much of a fit are they too? So how many times you reach out versus before you give up kind of matters mm-hmm. on what a fit they are. Are you doing lead scoring? Do they have a high lead score? I think there's a different answer for what score they have in your lead score system, if you have that. And if you don't, just determining who they are.
Some research, like, yeah. Are they the right title? Are right. they the right business for your organization? What form did they fill out? Like, did they fill out a contact sales form, or did they fill out a webinar form, or did they fill out an ebook, or did they subscribe to your blog, or like kind of considering context?
But in general, I like our best advice would be to be intentional about following up until you're intentional about not. So like Emily, like you just noted, like making sure you send a breakup email and say, okay, you know, insert humor, insert your personality. You don't have to be stiff and you can be professional and still show your personality. So I would say insert humor and let them know that you're going to stop bugging them, but you are still here. And yeah, then keep them on your list and come back a year later if you want to. But a lot in a short period of time until you decide this person has not responded enough times. Here's my line.
I love it. I think it's exactly right. There's your answer.
There you go. Okay. next question is, I know I need case studies on my website. How many should I have and how should I make them?
Great question. You do need case studies on your website. I'm glad we agree there. How many should I have and how should I make them? I think having a wide variety of case studies and how you display them. So
a wide variety, because like you should ask yourself the question, how many problems do you solve? If you only solve one problem, then I mean, you need more than one case study, but you don't need as many case studies showing you solving the one problem. But most of our clients in the B2B world are solving more than one problem.
Yeah. And kind of going back to one of our past conversations around like content remixing and like using content in multiple ways, like a case study is a really great example of that. You could have a case study that you have written, that you have a video, that you have shorter videos created, that you create some graphics with pullout quotes that you can share on social media. You could have a list of all of the
videos. Let's say, Emily, I feel like I need to pause and say, a quote from a client that you've pulled out and put on social media is not a case study, right?
No.
I think people get confused about that. They're like, oh yeah, I've got five logos and three quotes on my website, so I've got a case study.
Yeah, it's not a case study.
That's not people. No. It's not the same thing.
No, I'm really glad you said that. Yeah, a case study you want very, so how I like to structure case studies is having the problem.
And that they have before they know you. I have a problem.
And then the solution and then the results. So we're having problem, solution. Here are the results that they saw.
Right. A story. It's a story. A case study is a story of a business that had a problem that you swooped in to solve.
Yes.
And then if you were to, they're great, Jeremy's so smart. That's not a case study.
I would call that a testimonial or a review. Like I would say, like, if you pull out quotes from a case study and you post on your social media, you're sharing testimonials. And then ultimately the goal would be for them to get back to that case study and read it, because that's where they're going to see like the meat of the story.
You're helping your brand by showing logos and quotes, but you're not going to really build the trust until you tell the story of how your business helped the other business succeed.
Yeah. And I think having that story told in both video and written, if you can, is really powerful. I think that, as we know, video is becoming more popular, and having a PDF on your website is great for people who are coming to your website and looking for a case study. Mm-hmm. Like if they're like there are people that are in that decision phase, or even like just kind of doing their research and understanding what's out there and looking, they'll go to websites. I mean, I do it all the time with services. I go.
And ungated.
You don't gate case studies. No. You're not generating leads from a case study. You are promoting your brand and sharing your story with a case study.
And hopefully talking to somebody in the decision stage who's already been a lead.
Yeah. And you can use case studies really nicely in the buying process this is a really good touch point for sellers, especially like if they're not able to get a hold of someone or they're leaving a lot of voicemails. You know, reminder too, with what we've just been talking about this whole episode, like don't just reach out saying like, hi, are you there? Hi, get back to me. Hello, I'm just following up. You're on my list to contact today. Like I would always have what we call a valid business reason or a reason why someone should respond to you. And content and case studies is a really good way. Like, hey, we just had this case study for a business in your industry, or that we solved a problem that you know, you have potentially, or I've done some research and I see that you have XYZ, here's a case study on it. But having case studies is a really good tool for sellers too.
So how many do you need to have? You need to have some.
Some.
I think a minimum, let's call it a minimum of 3, yeah. But it depends how many problems you solve and making sure that you can give examples of how you've solved that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to have a case study for every problem you solve. So if you are, you know, if you have 5 or 6 like
service lines,
products that you sell, you would want to have 5 or 6 at least case studies, one for each.
And then as far as like the going back to the content remix and all the different ways to do it, I agree. I think video is very powerful because you can really receive emotion better in video than you can in a PDF. And I think case studies can be kind of emotional. So I think that's a good thing to portray to somebody in that stage. But I would say if you can't do high quality, narrow the field. I think a low quality video does the
opposite. I agree with that. Yeah. We don't want homemade films.
Yeah. If you can do a high quality video, then do video. But if you don't have the capacity or capability to do that, then stick with something that you can do high quality. And if that's a PDF, then that's a PDF. That's great too.
Yeah. Agree. 100%. Yeah. Videos that look low quality.
Right off. You'll
lose them.
Anyway, cool. That's it. That is what we have for today. Question wise too. So please, thank you for listening. Please continue to listen, connect with us. You can find our contact info in the show notes, as well as that graphic that we talked about. The famous
graphic.
Yes, our famous graphic is also in the show notes. But if you have any questions you want us to answer on the show, please do submit them. You can send a voicemail, a text, or an email. That information, again, is in the show notes. We would love to do our best to answer all of the questions that you will have, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in to the B2B Sales and Marketing Hotline.
Don't forget to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And if you've got a question for us, head to the show notes and let us know what's on your mind.
And visit our website, leadg2.com, where you can find even more helpful B2B sales and marketing resources.